Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we talk with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government, and including aspiring candidates. Sit back and enjoy.
We're back on Political Point of View here on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. I am joined, as I have been for the last couple of months, by the two Horowhenua representatives from the Horizons Regional Council, Sam Ferguson and Emma Clark, here from the Livermore studio. And the first thing I wanted to say to you two is I did my homework from the last episode on snails. Did you do your homework and go and vote?
I certainly did my homework and went and voted.
Yes, and I took advantage of the early voting to vote early. Didn't want to wait till election day and miss out.
You both made your minds up pretty early then?
Yes, I actually voted in Paiatua, and just a huge shout out to the Electoral Commission. A special vote over in Paiatua was absolutely seamless and easy to do. So
your vote won't come through for another couple of weeks then?
Exactly.
It is quite an interesting result. We obviously have a new parliament, as we discussed last month. That was about the extent that we could talk about, but with bigger results, it looks like it's going to be a national government. We'll wait for the preliminaries to see what type of arrangement that is. Would that affect a lot of the work that Horizons does, particularly around a lot of those promises, the Capital Connection? I know National has pledged to continue working on. RMA reform's a big topic. A lot of the urban expansion rules that National want to do with housing. How will that affect what you guys are doing?
Yeah, well, from an RMA and freshwater reform, what it does at the moment for the first sort of 12 months is create a heck of a lot of uncertainty, because some of that stuff has already been gazetted. So from a regional council point of view, we've got no choice but to keep sort of on the path that we're on. So if anyone's listening out there, Tim Costley, you know, the sooner we can get some real clear steer there from a regional council perspective, the better, because there's that feeling of, are we spending time in the right place? Is this energy well spent? And where are we going to be in 12 months' time?
And from a Capital Connection point of view, and just for listeners to remind where that's at, we've got one train a day at the moment. We've got a commitment from central government, or the Labor government made a commitment to fund the purchase of 18 new trains, which will replace the Capital Connection and also run on the Wairarapa line. So I've spoken with Tim Costley and with Chris Bishop, and there's a commitment from National to continue to engage and support that work. So We're working with Greater Wellington Regional Council, and until we've got a new Minister of Transport, we don't know who that is, but then we'll be able to continue those conversations and make sure that we deliver the outcomes that this community needs.
So yes, as you've said, Tim Costley is our new MP. I know when talking with both him and Bernie Wandon, the Mayor of Horowhenua, the MP and the Mayor usually have regular meetings. I know you both went on to Horizons the same time that Bernie became Mayor back in 2019. So do you have much interaction? At the start, it would have been the Honourable Nathan Guy. Last 3 years, Teresa Ngobi. Do you engage with the local MP for Ōtaki on a consistent and regular basis?
Yeah, we do. Not just from a regional council point of view, I suppose for the likes of myself, I do from a business perspective as well as a regional council, but I probably have more to do with other local councillors and the mayor and the CE in terms of that sort of cross-political relationships.
Mm. And I think that's, yeah, maintaining relationships right across the political spectrum is important. I've got my political views and my values, but having a working relationship with other elected representatives, it's about outcomes for our communities. And the more we can work together, the better.
Just on elected representatives, because Sam, Emma, you're both elected representatives now, but Sam, you've tried your hand at running for central government as well. You ran for the Green Party back in 2017. I know you're supposed to be neutral now, but I'm sure you must be fairly pleased with the result of the Green Party in the elections. They've won more electorate seats in this election than every previous election combined. Ali Mohammed has won more candidate votes and won more party votes for the Greens than, not outshining you, or Bernard's back in 2020. So it has been a good result for the Greens. Do you have much of a view on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, no secret that I've got a strong relationship with the Green Party. And when I did stand as a candidate, that was about representing the party and the party vote rather than my personal aspirations. There is strong support out there. I mean, we're sitting around about 11% at the moment, so that's one in 10 voters is supporting the Green Party, and some of that messaging that was out there. It's then going to be a party in the opposition, and I think we need a strong voice for the environment that continues to speak up for the important topics, and that's my hope that some of these new MPs, Steve Abel was one, very strong and effective voice for the Green Party, or for the environment, I should say.
10.77% on preliminary results, that's 14 MPs, 3 electorate, 11 on the list. They'll be quite strong in opposition on those numbers when you look at it. Is that going to be a threat to perhaps Labor going forward?
Labor, and we've heard Chris Hipkins talk about that they need to reevaluate. They're moving from a party of government to a party of opposition. There's changes for them. They've lost a lot of MPs. So yeah, Labor need to focus on what they're going to focus on. The Green Party will be, in my opinion, focusing on being an effective voice for the environment in opposition. Labor and Greens will certainly have some areas of common ground that they'll work on, I'm sure.
I mean, you're a bit lucky because you've never stood for central government, but do you have any thoughts on the makeup of the parties?
Never stood and never will. I think the election was very interesting, and I think it showed that there's still quite a few people who are very disenchanted, whatever colour of the political spectrum they were, backing. Though for National, I think they have got a really hard slog over the next 3 years to really solidify their position as a governor, and I really look forward to getting some runs on the board in terms of getting some policy settled down. I think we've just had 6 years of policy, and from a regional council perspective, that's been hugely overwhelming, has had a huge impact on our rates, both from a TA and a regional council point of view, and from a business perspective, it's created a lot of uncertainty. So that's probably what I'm really looking forward to, is just seeing some dust settle, get some real runs on the board, and let's hope that we can get some wins both in the environmental space and the social and economic space as well.
Been a long campaign. I'm sure people are sick of talking about politics at the central government level. I mean, we've been talking about it for nearly 8 minutes, so I think it's time to move on. I just hope that whoever makes up the government and the rest of parliament and how it all works, I'm sure they will do good things for the environment. Hopefully they'll protect Pawelli Fanta Traversy. Like I said, I've been doing my homework. Good old Travers Landsnail. You're both from Horizons. We might as well talk about Horizons. What's been going on in the last month since I've last spoken to you?
Right, we've had some results in from our pre-engagement for the long-term plan. That was a trial that we did that actually was an initiative of Sam's that we took from the Greater Wellington region. It wasn't an overwhelming response, but I think what we did find from the respondents that we did get is where we're tracking on the LTP seems to be where people want the regional council to be going. So that was a really good takeaway from that. And you're right, we have been a long campaign with the central government. We have had consultation for a regional transport plan. We've gone out with pre-engagement for the LTP. We've had freshwater engagement, and people get decision fatigue. But I think what's really important to recognise is while you may feel like your opinions aren't being reflected yet in runs on the ground, they still really count. And I really do hope that people going forward into the new year take advantage of the LTP consultation and make their suggestions and their opinions really heard.
Yeah, no, that certainly is an important point around consultation and community engagement. That as a elected councillor, we take time to read the submissions, and it's like we can't do everything. No one can. But hearing the voice of the community and helping to confirm that the direction that we're bringing to the table is a direction supported by the community, and the ideas that the community present, being able to take them into account where possible. But the other thing that's happening in horizons at the moment as we move closer to summer is starting the summer swim spot monitoring. So that's a big program we've got right across the region, and we sample water at dozens and dozens of sites on a weekly basis, and that helps inform our data around the state of the environment and also where it's safe to swim at certain times of the year.
Freshwater quality is obviously a big part of what you do. Obviously, Lake Horowhenua, the water quality is not where it should be. Are you satisfied on the whole of where the quality of water is throughout, we'll say the Horowhenua, because you're the Horowhenua representatives, but widely across the Manawatū Whanganui region?
I think there's a lot of work still to be done. But there's also a real lag between work that is being done and results you see it in the water. So I think we need to always be very mindful of that, that there is a lot of farming practices now that are so much better than they were 5, 6, 7 years ago. But it's going to take a decade plus to see the results of that come through in your water quality. I think the Slui program that we invest heavily in and still investing has incremental results year on year. I wouldn't say it's nowhere near pristine. There's still a lot of work to be done across the region and in the Horowhenua. And I think it's just realising that it's not a 5-second fix.
And I guess I'd add, I mean, water quality was one of the big motivators for why I even decided to put my name forward for Horizons in the first place, and just an area where I have a lot of passion. And, I mean, we've got challenges in our region for sure. Lake Horowhenua is the peak of that.
It's pretty most obvious but, one by far, yeah.
Absolutely, but even like we look at Waitereere Beach, and last summer the beach was closed for swimming because of that monitoring that we're doing and high E. coli levels. And that's a direct result of the rivers and what they're carrying out to the ocean. But at the same time, you look at Hokio River and going swimming up at clay banks. I mean, that is overall... The water's at a reasonable level there, but as we get out to the estuary, we know that there's pressures on some of those water bodies. Waikawa has some challenges too. If we look at what's happening out at the estuaries, because that's the accumulation of the water in the catchment as it comes, there's certainly room for improvement. There's challenges, and we were getting into some of the detail yesterday actually in a workshop, and just some of those conflicts around modern society, the urban sprawl of towns, our farming practices, all of that combines and is reflected in the quality of water. So if I had my way, there'd be a magic wand, we could wave it, but we don't. So it's then how do we, as a community, find that way forward? And that's not necessarily an easy question to answer.
Your summer swim program, do you have a favourite summer swim spot that you both like to frequent? And if so, what's the water quality like at it?
Well, yeah, Waitereere Beach would be mine because I live out there currently.
And there's E. coli there. That must be a problem.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I swam there multiple times when the E. coli warning was out and we were not sick because I didn't even check the NIWA website. But anyway, the other one would be Oha River. There's a couple of neat little swimming holes there that I find is great for the kids, great jumping.
Yeah, and I grew up camping at Vinegar Hill, just north of Hunterville on the Rangitiki River. So, yeah, I love going back there. Yeah, great river, great swimming. But that's actually where part of my journey for water quality did start. When I took my kids camping there, and I was swimming in the river, and there was algae floating down. And I thought it was Didymo. I mean, I just didn't know what this was, but came to learn algae is then just, it's the level of nitrogen in the water and also water temperatures. And that's a sign of stress on the river. Yeah, on a regular basis now in summer that I see that algae. And you see kids getting it together and almost making these algae balls that they throw at each other. But that's a reasonably recent phenomenon in that river. So that, I mean, and there's a lot of science behind that. But it is under stress.
People who want to do more to protect these various waterways, as you've said, there's no quick fix, but small things that people can do on a daily basis. I think in the last two shows, Sam, we've talked about the detergent which goes down into the streams, into the lake. People don't know about that. If they did, they probably wouldn't wash their cars the same way. What's some advice given that you two have been there for 4 years, you would have seen a lot of the data that most people don't see, some small things people can do to help improve our waterways.
Yeah, I guess in urban settings, everything that we see on the road, whether it's plastic, whether it's dog poo, or anything else, oil from a car, everything on the road ends up either in the ocean or in a water body. And in the case of Levin, predominantly that is Lake Hauruwhenua. So then it's just about the awareness of what we are doing on those roads. And if someone puts their rubbish out or recycling out and it's a windy day and recycling gets blown everywhere, well, that's going to invariably end up in a water body. And then it breaks into small pieces and we get microplastics. So, yeah, what we do in our urban areas certainly does have an impact. Yeah.
And I think, too, if you're on town water supply, remembering that water is a precious resource, because a lot of that stress, too, comes in low water flows, and we see then the water can't handle the concentrations of nitrogen, etc., in it. So turn that tap off when you're brushing your teeth. You know, turn the shower off, ladies, when you're shaving your legs, or guys. You know, when you are washing your car, you don't need that hose, if you're using town water, to be running 24/7. So just be very mindful. Water is a resource, and we're very blessed that we don't have to pay for every litre of water that we consume as individuals.
It's finite, basically.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where my kids grew up, on water tanks. So suddenly there's an awareness of the finite resource, just the same that as families. You don't leave the light switch on, or you don't leave the light on in the lounge when you're not there, because we know that there's a power bill coming. But when we have no awareness of how much water we're actually using, then it's easy to not make those decisions. So, yeah, the kids growing up on water tanks know how to conserve
water.
They
know, yeah.
My kids have learnt the very hard way halfway through a shower, and we have got no water left, and we have to wait for the truck.
That sounds painful. When it comes to consultation, and we see this a lot, just had central government, all the campaigning that's gone on, local government, the Hauruwhenua District Council have just done a survey on resident confidence. You do a lot of consultation with the public. Consultation fatigue, is that a real thing, Emma?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a real thing to have fatigue trying to decide what to cook for dinner, let alone trying to decide what's going to be best for your community, or what your aspirational views are for your public transport, or how you think the footpaths should be fixed. But it is absolutely key that we share those aspirations with our councils, because that is how the councillors sit around the table and vote and make decisions on how to spend the rates that you have invested into your areas.
Why so many workshops then? I hear you have a lot of workshops. Well, we talked about this before, and you said that often the public don't really understand some of the work they do. What is some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes in that space? And is that something the public should be aware of, or is that just going to add to the consultation fatigue that's going on?
I think workshops have a place where I don't actually think there can be full transparency. There are some things in workshops that allow councillors to be able to be vulnerable, ask the dumb questions of management to get the right answers, and then have some really healthy debate without being held to, or, you know, hung out to dry because they had a varied opinion at the beginning and then they changed it after receiving all the information. So workshops give councillors that ability to go on a bit of a journey and, yeah, be open to changing their minds and stuff. But actually, if at the end of the day, if it was all to be public, go for gold. I'm pretty sure, though, that the percentage of people in public who are that interested in our workshops wouldn't be that high.
So, Sam, it's about creating flexibility more than anything.
I think it is. And I think for me, the broader topic is probably it's democracy, it's transparency, it's accountability. And at one end of the spectrum, accountability is an election every 3 years, and that's the only input that public get. For me, that's not good for our democracy at all. So then it's about how do we involve the community in decision-making and seeing how we make the decisions, the information that we get for those decisions. And yeah, so at the moment we're going through long-term plan workshops and talking about what proportion of our rates should be general rates and what should be universal annual general charges. people don't know. I mean, I'm after 4 years, I'm still getting my head around that. That's quite technical stuff, but it has an impact on our communities in different ways as well. And so that balance of how much is discussed in a workshop, how much is discussed in public, ultimately our decision making needs to be in public, and that's part of a good democratic system. But as Emma said, the safe place to ask silly questions, if that's always in public, then it's not always a safe place to ask those questions. So yeah, there's just trying to land it in the right place, I think.
Just to throw a curveball your way, because the long-term plan from 21 to 31, I'm assuming that's the same one you're working on, is 222 pages. I'm sure most people listening to this have not read most, if not all of that. I'm assuming, I would hope, that you two would be fairly familiar with it. If there was one thing from it that you would want the public to most know about or to be most concerned about, what would it be?
Oh, gosh.
I told you it was a curveball.
Yeah, I think I would say it's about those community outcomes that we're focused on, because ultimately that is driving the work that we do, the priority that we put into various areas. And those community outcomes are aspirational, but at the same time, we've got a story behind them. And so things like water quality, things like public transport, and so that's one that I've been pushing for this long-term plan, is getting public transport in there stronger. So, yeah, if there was one thing I'd be looking at is the community outcomes and then how we're delivering on those.
Yeah, I think the first four or so pages of the LTP are really important for people to read, though we do debate nearly line for line of things in the LTP as if someone is going to read it all. But yeah, I think the community outcomes are definitely the driver, and that is where you can get your aspiration for what you want to input into the decision-making process. And it may be public transport is an easy one. Often we have biodiversity, which is another one that is really heavily engaged with, so your pest plant management programs. Those are going to be under pressure this time around the LTP. So if one word of advice, if you are a community group out there with really environmental aspirations, that's what you need to hammer home.
Because the LTP is such a large document, and it's one of several you actually have, because you've got annual plans on top of that as well, I have people who say, long documents, long things, long conversations, just price it, make it nice and simple. Do you think you're holding yourselves fairly accountable when you're hiding all the devil in the detail, so to speak?
Unfortunately, that is a mandated requirement from audit.
It's
so
necessary.
We do not have any choice about what goes into that LTP and how it's expressed to a certain extent. So it's then how we choose to nuance the requirements. Like Sam said, we have a debate at the moment about what percentage of general rates versus direct charges, but legislatively we can only do 30% of one or the other. So, you know, there's some real binding stuff that we can't skip out on as councillors or a council.
I think for me that's part of the reason why I pushed for some early engagement around the long-term plan, because formal consultation has certain processes we have to follow. But where we do community engagement, we've got a lot of flexibility of the message we present, what we're asking for. And we as a council, can try and make it as accessible as possible. And that comes in many shapes and forms. It's the messaging we put in, it's the questions we ask, but it's also how people even know about the engagement. And I agree, a 200 or more page document is extremely difficult for the average person to engage with. So then it's about how do we try and make it accessible on many fronts. I don't think we're not there yet. We've got room for improvement for sure.
More generically, in terms of council and political environment, how can we make ourselves, or how can councillors make themselves more accountable? How can they make themselves just better in terms of how they go about governing?
Sam does a really good job at this, and he makes himself available to many multiple community groups. I get a little bit time poor with having a younger family and being a solo mum that I don't get out there as much as I should, but it is fronting that community. It's last time in the LTP, Sam and I had slots both in the Foxton and the Levin Library for people to just come and sit with us and talk. And whether that be accusations about what a terrible job we're doing, or whether it be just genuine questions or stuff. So I think it's making yourself available to the public, doing things like this on the radio and actually voicing our views, so that someone then can pick up the phone and go, Emma, I completely disagreed with that, or Emma, have you thought of, or Sam, have you thought of, is really important, because there's not many other ways for our Horowhenua community to engage with us. I love what HDC do with a cup of tea with a councillor. Great way of being accountable to your community and being able to open up to have conversations with them.
Mm. No, yeah, there's quite a few layers to all of that, but certainly engaging with the community where they are, rather than expecting the community to come to us. I mean, so that, for me, is trying to put the time into engaging community groups, but that is time, and I have to prioritise that over family and work and everyone else, challenges of life and just juggling. Where there's a willingness to engage, it can go a long way. And I personally, I feel that Emma and I are both really easy to approach, but that's not everyone has been in the past, I guess. So, and it's easy to kind of other people. And so what I mean by that is just pointing the finger or saying, well, they're doing a crap job. But when you actually put a face to that and sit down and talk, then you can start to understand different points of view. So, yeah, the more community engagement we can do, the more available and accessible, and going to where the people are.
And it's good on a one-on-one personal level, basically, because you talk about putting a face to it. But as you correctly identified, Emma, the HDC, do a couple with a councillor once a month or a couple of times a month. You say you both have some engagements at the library in Foxton or in Levin. Is that a permanent fixture you both do? Is there a way people can meet with you face-to-face on a regular basis?
No, that was just at the LTP consultation, and I'm going to assume, well, I shouldn't assume because it'll make it out of you and me, that we will do it again this time round and maybe look at other ways we can connect. But I think going to where the people are, Sam's dead right. You know, I try to get to our Wairarapa ratepayers community meeting every month and stuff like that. And you do garnish some really good things by just getting into someone else's environment and sitting there and being held accountable and open to ideas.
I talked about why I stood for council, or what some of the reasons I stood for council in the first place, and those reasons still exist. But as a community representative, I'm not just representing my views. Ultimately, even the people who didn't vote for me, I am representing, and it's trying to be able to hear those views, respect those views, even if I don't agree with them, doesn't mean that I'm right and they're wrong, but that can be hard to work through sometimes, because yeah, it's people coming from different backgrounds, different experiences than myself. But when I'm making decisions, I need to at least be able to put my hand on my heart and say I have considered the other views and perspectives. And that's democracy in some ways as well.
We're coming towards the end of our program. In the conversation I had with Mayor Bernie Wandon, he reflected on his first year in this term, in this triennium. He had been there for 4 years, but first year since the last local body elections, a year and a couple of weeks or so. What's one highlight that you would pick on as being the highlight for you over the year on Horizons?
I'm going to do two: the Capital Connection and the Palmerston North bus network being fully electric.
Well, I'm going to give you Capital Connection from the Horowhenua on that one. Emma?
Oh, gosh, highlights. I actually, hand on heart, have found this year a bit of a struggle. It has been quite difficult, I think, when you have momentum as an old council to then stop. Rejiggy is a new council with a whole lot of new faces and new opinions and stuff and form a new dynamic. But if I was going to say one highlight is being part of the Horowhenua Transport Governance Group. It's been really inspiring to see where HTC and Horizons kind of want to go as a collective on this for our community. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that embedded in the next couple of years and getting some runs on the board.
Anything else you'd like to put before we leave you for yet another month? Is it going to be a month? Maybe a few weeks?
Well, the only thing is doing this monthly makes the month go very fast.
It's a good way to keep you both in check, really, isn't
yes.
it?
No, nothing else from me. It's a pleasure to talk, as always, Oliver.
No, thank you very much. Do you have any words of wisdom for incoming Representative Tim Costley, outgoing MP Teresa Ngobi, before we go?
Don't hesitate to pick up the phone.
Yeah, I'd certainly acknowledge the work that Teresa's done. I found her a great advocate for our community and speaking for some of the voices that don't always get heard in our community. Looking forward to catching up with Tim at some point, and soon we've got things in common, such as the Capital Connection. I think we can achieve good things in those spaces.
And we're done for yet another month with our two Horowhenua representatives from the Horizons Regional Council, Emma Clark, Sam Ferguson. Thank you for both stopping by. You've been listening to Political Point of View here on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM.
You have been listening to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. In this program, we've talked with politicians of all types, of all sorts, from local government through to central government, and including aspiring candidates.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.